Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Tuesday. Let's not waste any time. Let's bring in from the Sporting Tribune, Brandon Deutsch, Grant Mona. Do have to start with Mr. Grant Mona, who covered his first Clippers game in person for the Sporting Tribune and went viral with the Legion of Hoops, shout out. First of all, Grant, how did it go?
It was fantastic. That was a lot of fun. Obviously, I've been to Crypto.com Arena a lot as a fan, but never as, a media member. So I had to ask a lot of questions and navigate my way around. But, once you're in the flow of things, it's actually really relaxed. It's a cool vibe. Everyone's really nice. It was just a really cool experience, just to, be a part of the pressers and be in the press box. It was awesome. So hopefully I can do it again. But yeah, the first time had to navigate a little bit, but it was really fun. I had a great time.
So you saw up close what you had seen from afar. It was a big game in the sense that Russell Westbrook did come back. However, it did not change the way this team is playing. Big takeaway from what you saw.
It was the same thing we saw on Sunday. There was really no other explanation for it. It was kind of the exact game. The Clippers got off to a pretty good start. They were up 5 after the first quarter. Things looked good on the offensive end, but obviously, Indiana is such a great offensive team that, it's going to take a lot for them to slow down, right? So, especially with how the Clippers have been playing on defense, it was going to be, a big issue for them. But for the first half, they kind of held their own. They stayed within 10. And just like we saw on Sunday against the Sixers, the Clippers just could not keep up with the Pacers in the second half. In the fourth quarter, it was another collapse, another blowout. And it just seems like every time the Clippers needed a stop, they couldn't get it. Every time they needed a bucket, they couldn't get it. I'm going to reiterate this again, and this was the buzz around everybody, is that they just look like a step slow. They look like an older team. Russell Westbrook made his return, and he looked fantastic in his 18 minutes. He had 14 points, 7 assists, I think 2 rebounds, maybe 4 rebounds. I can't really remember, but he was an immediate impact. He was one of the best players on the floor last night, and to be honest with you, I really thought that he should have played more minutes. I thought he should have played more than 18. Ty Lue said that there was no minutes restriction for him, and I thought that we would see him at least in the 20s, maybe even the 30s. He was better than James Harden last night, that's for sure. So this team, they got to do some soul searching. That's why, Ty Lue said after the game, he said, we're soft. And he's not wrong. They're playing like a soft team. And, there's been a lot of things brought up about their identity and what their identity is. Have they lost their identity. Ty Lue said it himself. He says, look, we got to have investment, not sacrifice. I love that he said that. He didn't say anything about sacrifice because that's the main word that everyone uses. But he said it's investment because when you put an investment into the team and for the betterment of the team, you reap the rewards. That's with any investment you make. So I don't know what they do at this point other than just try to get to the playoffs and stay out of the play-in because Arash and Brandon, you guys both know this. Yeah. They are now 2 games up on the play-in tournament. They're the 5 seed now. That is, I mean, just a month and a half ago, they were the 1 seed for 24 hours, and now they're the 5 seed and not going to have home court in the first round, which is baffling.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Your thoughts on that? Again, now this is like the worst case scenario. A, they didn't want to be in that 4-5 matchup with the Pelicans. Now they're in a situation because they don't have the tiebreaker. They're the 5 seed. They would not have home court. And doomsday scenario, what Grant's been fearing, they are only 2 games away from dropping all the way down to this play-in tournament.
Yeah, in fact, I think they will be in the play-in tournament. I truly do. I don't even think they won enough games early on in the season when they were, what, 38 and 18 or something? Something crazy like that. They were like 20 games over 500, 22 maybe at some point. Everything was clicking, and it started on the defensive end. I mean, Russell Westbrook was a pivotal piece for that team, and I think him being out for so long definitely hurt them the regular season. I don't think it would have made a difference in the playoffs because the team was never going to win a playoff series, I guess, just if you're just looking at how soft they play. I mean, Grant said it, we're soft. Like, you reported that. Like, yeah, they're a soft team. They were soft even when they were winning. I mean, James Harden looked good, but once teams started to figure out his style of play, the system, it was over. He's looked like a shell of himself this year. This is why no one wanted to trade for James Harden. Part of it, I mean, part of it is he's always asking for a trade every 6 months, like clockwork, right? But the second part is he's deteriorating his body. He's getting older. He's not the same player. And everybody knew that they didn't want to pay this guy $55 million in the extension that he wants, right? Like, because he's getting older, he's not the same player. Even on the 76ers last year, the guy was still putting up 38 points per game. Not 38 points per game, but 38 point games with like 10 assists in the playoffs, like in big games. He's not going to be doing that for the Clippers this year. That is a big problem, Arash. And when I look at the way Dallas is playing Phoenix, I mean, the way the Lakers look excellent against everybody except the Kings and the Nuggets. They're a 9 seed, the Lakers, and they're starting to creep up on the Clippers too. I know they won't have enough games to catch them, but because they're 5 games back or whatever, 5.5. But there's a scenario the Clippers only win 2 of their last, you know, remaining games. Like, I look at their schedule right here, 76ers, Magic, probably both losses, right? Hornets is their 1 win that I can see coming up. Kings, they're going to lose. Nuggets, they're going to lose. Jazz, maybe they lose that. That was the second win I was counting. Cavaliers, Suns, Jazz, then the Rockets to end the year. And the Rockets have won 10 straight games almost, like 9, I think. Man, I see 2 wins in that, maybe 3. That screams 47 wins. And the way the rest of the West is playing, that could be in the 7 seed.
Greg, you've covered, I mean, you've obviously followed the Clippers from afar, but being in the press conference room, being in the press room, in the press box, seeing how these guys are, you can really learn a lot from body language, tone of voice, like even the other, the press corps. And again, you follow Farbod and Joey and Tomer, and like you can even feel it in their tweets. They're like, "What the heck is going on? Oh, what was that like to see it in person?" Was there something that stood out to you, I guess?
Yeah, they're just like me in the way I talk about the Clippers. These guys, look, they're real. I mean, they, you know, it was just so shocking to everybody, honestly, with the way they're playing. You know, coming in, the buzz around the press room was about Russell Westbrook and his return and how everyone was excited. Maybe that injects something into this team. But after the game, it was just more shock. You know, I saw a lot of faces that were just, baffled about how this team has responded to adversity. They haven't, and that's the issue. You know, even Ty Lue in his pressers, you know, even before the game and after the game, he's searching for something. He's trying to say something to motivate the team. And, you know, Russell Westbrook was, you know, pretty upbeat, and he was in good spirits after the game, obviously, because it was his first game back. But, you know, that's just the kind of guy that Russ is. You know, he's always trying to, you know, find the positive in things. But around the press room and around, you know, the tunnels, it was a lot of just shocked faces and conversation about, you know, is this team going to be a play-in team? You know, Brandon, a lot of the people that I talked to shared the same sentiment that you said about, hey, this is a tough stretch in the last 11 games. I heard some 3-8s. I heard some 4-6s, 4-7s. I didn't hear a lot of people say that the Clippers would finish with a winning record in their last 11. So that just kind of shows you about how, you know, the temperature of this team. And it's not just the team, it's the people that have seen this team day in and day out, just how they operate. And it's just such a fall from grace. I mean, that's what's so shocking to everybody. It's just such a distinct fall from the number one, number three seed, that kind of group, to now being in a group where, you know, a lot of these teams, you wouldn't even have thought the Clippers would be talked about with them about a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, they for a day were the number one seed in the West. Again, we've talked about this. They've never been the one seed, and their highest seed in franchise history was the two seed. And they were really in contention for a top three seed, certainly, you know, getting home court in the first round. But as we sit here today on a Tuesday, they would not have home court. The Lakers, switching gears, Brandon, going on the road. LeBron James has been ruled out for tonight's game against the Milwaukee Bucks. Long road trip for them. They are now obviously trending in the right direction in terms of, you know, they are only three games back of, you know, maybe the sixth seed. But at the very least, getting home court in that play-in tournament. Your thoughts on LeBron being out tonight against Milwaukee, but also how the Lakers are playing right now.
They're playing great basketball. We just look at the last two games. I know defensively it was a tale of two games. Basically, they looked great defensively against the 76ers, who, you know, curb stomped the Clippers a few days later. So it's not like they didn't have any offense. The Lakers really stepped up. That was the best I've seen them switching, rotating on defense in a really long time, ever since Vanderbilt went out. And then they gave up 145 points to the Pacers. They almost blew a 30-point lead. Or not a 30-point lead, but like a 20-point lead.
Yeah.
You know, which is pretty crazy. But the Pacers are a good team. They've been playing excellent basketball. They've won a lot of their last 10 games. They're trying to avoid the play-in, too. They also beat the Clippers. Sorry for the beatings in the head, Grant, about the Clippers. But, yeah, I mean, teams love to have their hot streak. Like, Halliburton was shooting 20% from three over the past, like, three weeks, and he was like 4 out of 4 to start the game from three against the Clippers. I treat it like the Angels. Like, everyone has their best day against the Angels, right?
Career highs across the board,
exactly. But going back to the Lakers, it's going to be increasingly tough for them to get 7 or 8. I mean, 8 is definitely manageable, but the problem is, if they can get 8, they need to really win that 7-8 game, because Denver looks like they're going to lock up 1.
Yeah.
And we know the fate of the Lakers if they play Denver in the first round. Like, we just know. It doesn't take a genius to figure it out. You keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same result. You can't keep doing the same thing and expect a different result, right? Like, we know they're going to lose in 4 or 5 games to the Denver Nuggets if they play them. But if they do get the 7 seed, if they're able to go 9-2 or like 9-3 around that, which is really difficult, but they need that record because other team in the West is balling. They could beat Phoenix, Dallas, or, you know, dare I say it, who's really probably going to be the 7 seed, Sacramento.
That's
another team that they can't beat the way Sabonis is playing. Those are the two teams you don't want to play. So realistically, I think the Lakers need to think about next season. I really do. As good as they are, they didn't take care of... No. I think they're the second best team in the Western Conference right now, but they still need to think about next season because of the way the Western Conference is being played. I think you can have both. I think right now they're the second best team in the West. I think you put them against Minnesota. Anybody but the Kings or Denver, they beat. The reason why I don't have the Kings ahead of the Lakers is because the Kings cannot beat the teams the Lakers can beat, oddly enough, which is weird. The problem is they lost too many games in January and December. Following that in-season tournament, Arash, they lost way too many games. You and I both know that. That screwed their season, and they would have been the fourth seed with this identical record that they have now last year. But this year, the West is so tough. So I do think their floor and their ceiling are pretty much the same. I think they win that 9-10 game, whether it's against Houston or Golden State. I do think they finish ninth. And then I think they lose to Sacramento in the 8 game. I really do. If it's Dallas, they get lucky. If it's Phoenix, they get lucky because they can beat either of those teams. But if it's Sacramento, LeBron better pack his bags and not even play that game. There is a 0% chance they beat Sacramento. They cannot beat that team to save their life. They can't hit water if they fell out of a boat against those teams. I mean, it's ridiculous. De'Aaron Fox looks like the second coming of Christ. Sabonis looks like prime Shaq against Anthony Davis. I mean, I'm not even over exaggerating. You have to really look at some soul searching, Arash. Yeah. And Darvin Ham will be fired at the end of the season, regardless of what happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes, a lot to unpack there. I don't love the fact that they have not been able to beat the Kings. I mean, I have no problem, I guess, in the big scheme of things with them not being able to beat the best team and the best player in the league in the Denver Nuggets in Nikola Jokic. But yeah, the fact that they've been swept in the season series by the Sacramento Kings for the first time since 2015-2016 is not great. Wanted to get your both thoughts on Shohei Ohtani. Again, he did not take questions from the media, but he did have a 12-minute prepared statement to a packed press room. And listen, I mean, he did respond in the statement to a lot of the questions that we did have. Some of the main questions that we still don't know the answers to is how did his interpreter gain the, like how did he access his bank account to the point where he transferred $4.5 million to an illegal bookmaker? That's really like the biggest question. But Grant, let me start with you before I get Brandon's thought. I mean, did not love the fact that you would have a press conference where you're not going to take any questions. But your, I guess, general thoughts on Shohei Ohtani's first public comments since all this happened.
Well, he said the right things. You know, obviously he said, he had no involvement in any gambling. He's never had any history with it. Obviously, you know, the main quotes is that he was shocked and baffled by Ipe's actions. Yeah, it was a very stoic look, obviously not taking questions. I would have liked to see him take questions, but I understand why. You know, obviously this situation is going to be fluid. You know, we're going to learn more things as it comes out. And a statement was needed, obviously. He needed to make this statement. He needed to go in front of everybody. And it was kind of odd to see a lot of the players in that. Joe Kelly was there. I think Dave Roberts was there. Gavin Lux. So there's like a lot of Dodger players that sat in for that. I don't think I've seen that before from a legal standpoint. When there's a legal announcement from a player or an organization. But yeah, it was everything that he needed to say. And obviously now he said I want to move on from this and let my lawyers, take handle of this and kind of focus on baseball. So I understand, why he had to do it. I would just have loved to see him probably take a few questions at least, maybe from some of the top reporters, but it was needed. I think that's the main point.
And Brandon, your thoughts on Shohei again, do appreciate that it was 12 minutes long. It wasn't, a 2-second statement, but at the end of the day, still a lot of questions that we have.
I don't know why people expected a lot. I mean, if you were covering his time with the Angels, I was there, he's not going to answer much. He's not going to answer tough questions. He's going to do it on his own pace. He's protected by a lot of people because he's so popular and so great. And look, Shohei Ohtani is an excellent baseball player, but to me, the optics looked bad when he was on the Angels, ducking a lot of questions for a long time. And they look even worse now, considering the severity of this. He should be answering questions. Let's be real. He should be answering questions. It was very soft that he wasn't answering questions. It was the wrong decision. And if he was going to do that, Arash, you mentioned this, why didn't you just issue your statement the night before? Why do you have to set up a press conference if you're not going to answer questions, right? And he's not going to talk about this for the foreseeable future. And we know the MLB is not going to give him any punishment, even though he probably deserves it. Regardless, I don't believe, look, this is my personal opinion. I do believe because of the retracted statement originally when they said, oh, it was okay. Well, you know, I may have wired him the money, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's illegal to gamble in California, right? So they realized it was illegal. He would have been suspended by the league. Oh, then Ipe had access to my account and everything and stole money. Like, I don't believe that. I'm sorry. I know he's saying it. I don't believe that personally. I think Shohei did wire him the money. But look, I'm not, I don't know what the truth is. He said all the right things, like Grant said, very politician-like, responses by Shohei, very Hollywood ready for all the glitz and the glamour. He's not going to get suspended. Let's just call a spade. The MLB wants their golden boy playing, and it's not going to happen.
Well, regardless, I mean, of what happened. Like, we have to figure out what he did wrong. The big thing is there's two investigations. One of them means
yes.
The other. The Internal Revenue Service, the IRS is investigating this. There's a federal investigation. And then to a lesser extent, and the reason I say lesser extent, there's the Major League Baseball investigation. The Major League Baseball investigation is really going to just kind of what did the feds find out? What did the IRS find? We will find out how that money was transferred. It's only a matter of time. And I believe that his legal representatives right now are smart enough to know they cannot put their client in a position where he's going to lie. That's why, even though he was not in a courtroom, he was not under oath, I think at this point it would be very foolish if I'm his attorney to put him out there to make a statement that's not true. So we'll see. We'll see how this all plays out. At the very least, like, he lied about where he went to college.
100%. Yeah.
It's kind of like there's now, like, no one heard about this guy for the most part, and I hate to say, but like, now we're like looking into his background, and we found the fact that he like lied about when he went to college. So, you know,
I think the big thing is here before we finish right here, if he had transferred that money to Ipe knowingly in Vegas, wouldn't be a problem.
It was
an illegal bookie. That's the big issue. Right. And California needs to legalize gambling. That's the larger issue.
That's a separate topic. And Brandon, I want to get more of your thoughts when we come back. This has put a little bit of a cloud, you know. I mean, like, I think the home opener, the reopening day, Thursday. And again, it's still going to be joyous. It's going to be happy. If the Dodgers win, fans will be happy. But there's like now news reporters coming out that are not even focused on the game. So we'll see how all that plays out. So we'll say goodbye to Grant. We'll leave it there for now. When we come back, talk to Brandon a little bit more about Shohei Ohtani, but also the USC Women of Troy going on to the Sweet 16. So we'll talk about that when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. All right, let's bring back in Brandon Deutsch. Brandon, you covered Shohei Ohtani. And one thing that I had heard from people who have covered the team like yourself is really how guarded he was, how the team very much protected him. You couldn't shoot any video. You couldn't do like certain things. It seems like maybe that is stretching to the Dodgers as well. I don't know if you heard, but you know, no cameras allowed in there. That if you wanted to show the press conference, it was being streamed on Spectrum Sportsnet, and I don't know, just a lot of things happening there. What was it like covering Shohei and your thoughts on kind of the fact that for the majority of his career, he's been really protected, it seems?
Yeah, I mean, no one really knew about his wife either. He was a very secretive guy, which, you know, has the, which really it makes the allure of like, oh, could he have actually been gambling? I don't think so. You know, just being around him, I don't think he's that type of person. However, you know, I guess, like we said, time will tell whether it comes out he knew about the transfers, because it's really hard for me to believe that Ipe had control of his account and to take that money and stuff like that and wire it over in his name. But that's a whole separate conversation. We mentioned this in the last segment. I think covering him was great. Obviously a generational talent, possibly, you know, once in a lifetime type of talent, right? Like there's really, we haven't seen anything like this before. And it just, I feel like we were robbed as reporters of coverage, you know, to the level I think he should be covered, because he's such a talent. And I think the Dodgers reporters will have the same problem. We've already started to see it. I think with a guy that talented, you need exclusive interviews. You need questions every day. Like the narrative should be around him. There should be reports about him every day. There should be, you know, questions asked him every day, similar to LeBron asking questions after the game, right? Like LeBron is the face of the NBA. You want to talk to him constantly. Now LeBron has his own podcast. And I get it if Ohtani wants to be secretive, but it's like they're putting him on this pedestal. And at the same time with the Angels, right? And we thought he wouldn't be able to do this with his time with the Dodgers. You know, they won't let it slide as much. Bigger, even bigger market, even though they're both LA, you know, Anaheim versus the Dodgers is a whole different animal. And it's the same thing. He's being protected. He's, you know, there's not a lot of coverage yet about this situation, but even his game, he is secretive, but I would like to see more interviews and more, you know, questions on a daily basis to him, because why does he, as good as he is, why does he get to not answer questions on certain days? But, you know, Bobby Miller does, you know, to me, it's just like, you're a team. I get there's guys that are better, but you're a team and you guys should all be held accountable and answer questions together. That's just kind of how I see sports media.
No. And you know, it'll be very interesting, because it seems like the vibes of this team were such where like they were really getting along. And I don't think that that's going to change. But when you have a scandal involving your team and you have heightened media attention and you bring in the news media, so it's not just sports reporters now covering it, you got CNN and Fox News and things of that nature. So it does change things. So it was nice, I guess, that some of his teammates were there in the press conference room supporting him. We'll see how all this plays out. I think this is one of those rare situations where we will find out the truth. Again, when it comes to wire transfers, and when you get the government involved, when you get the Fed involved, for them, this will not be hard to figure out who wired who the money. How did someone gain permission to like access the funds? Again, if it was his interpreter, how did that happen? So we'll find out. Again, doomsday scenario, I think, has been averted. I mean, I would be, and I agree with you, I would be shocked if he actually bet on sports, certainly bet on baseball, but like, if this is if the worst thing he did, and this is his one lie, if he actually did wire funds to help out a friend, my guess is that that's not jail time. That's not a suspension. It's maybe a fine or something along those lines. But again, we'll see how all this plays out. Some news, Brandon, coming out of the National Football League, the owners meetings and all the coaches are there in Orlando. The kickoff, for lack of a better and this has been the case for a while. I mean, the basically the kickoff is no longer a part of the sport. Basically, like everything is going to be a touchback. They've also basically done away with the onside kick. If you're going to do an onside kick, you basically have to let the other team know. For the most part, the surprise onside is extremely rare, but the league has effectively done away with it. It is no longer you cannot do that. Your thoughts on those two new rules?
Well, I think the biggest is the third, hip drop tackle, just not being able to do that.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, the kickoffs, yeah, I mean, most people now touch back anyways. So it's like, yeah, you're not going to get the returns that are crazy and happen every once in a while. But, you know, that's, I'm okay with that. Like, it's not the end of the world if everybody starts on the 2025, right? Like, whatever. Like, to me, it's okay. But the hip drop tackle, I don't think it should have been banned. How else are you supposed to tackle somebody if you're behind them? I mean, injuries happen. That's the sport. Like, Tony Pollard is never the same because of that tackle that I think it was Chevarius Ward, but one of the Niners players, I might be messing up one of the corners, tackled him, and he hasn't gotten his burst back. Like, Mark Andrews had a season-ending injury pretty much, but came back. So it wasn't as bad as people thought, actually. I mean, how are you supposed to tackle tight ends on the open field? How are you supposed, if you're like behind a guy? I mean, Christian McCaffrey is going to go for like 3,000 yards this year if you ban the hip drop tackle. I mean, to me, it makes no sense whatsoever. And at the end of the day, I don't get this. The players are frustrated, and you might as well put just flags and make it flag football soon enough, honestly.
Yeah. By the way, I mean, that was the sentiment from a lot of defensive players, but this seems to be a rule that they're probably going to test out. But yeah, at some point in time, you have to allow defenders to tackle. If a running back is coming at you and you wrap your arms around his waist, like, you cannot tackle that way. I mean, it doesn't seem realistic, and so we'll see how that plays out. You've done an amazing job, Brandon, with your mock drafts. Again, I think some of it is sorting itself out. We could have four quarterbacks, at least three. What have you thought about Jim Harbaugh really being over the top in his praise? You're already smiling. What is the thought process there? And do you think that there's a certain player that he wants with the number five pick that he's hoping that four quarterbacks go in the top four?
Yeah, chestnut chuckers, Arash. He is piping up his guy, even though he knows deep in his heart he's not as good as the other three quarterbacks there. And personally, I don't think he's as good as Michael Penix Jr. or Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, just watching his tape. Now, I could be wrong, and if he goes to Minnesota, that's an excellent situation. Like, you'd have to really suck to be bad in Minnesota, throwing to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, USC alum, and have Kevin O'Connell as a play caller, who's one of the best in the league, by the way. I think this is smart by Jim Harbaugh. I mean, we're going to a situation where the Cardinals are likely going to trade the pick to Minnesota, who's going to select J.J. McCarthy. That's kind of how it's looking like right now. And if they move up to three, perhaps, you know, someone goes to four and takes J.J. instead, and the Vikings get May. Whatever that is, it's really looking like Marvin Harrison Jr. to the Chargers at five, because they desperately need a receiver.
Yeah.
Now, I would limit Charger fans as hype for Marvin Harrison Jr. a little bit. I think he is a little bit overrated as a prospect. I think he's great. I really do. It concerns me he didn't participate in his pro day. Concerns me he thinks he's above everybody else by not doing that. I mean, even Caleb Williams participated in his pro day. Like, you know, he knew he was going to be the top pick. He did it anyways, right? Like, that's just what you do. Yeah. That concerns me. That shows some character things personally. Now, maybe he's a great guy. I've heard nothing but great things. That is a red flag. And the second thing is, I think Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze are just as good, if not better, than Marvin Harrison Jr. I think the brand name, because of his father, is a little bit, you know, swaying people the way that he's going five. But the Chargers could be fine, even if the Cardinals select Marvin Harrison Jr. They can take Malik Nabers, or they can take Rome Odunze. These are three all-pro receivers in the NFL, Arash. This is a deep wide receiver class. So whatever the Chargers choose to do, as long as it's not Joe Alt, the tackle from Notre Dame, which would just infuriate the fan base, right? Because then they have no one. Quentin Johnston would be their number one wide receiver. And the Charger fans are already done with that guy. They're sick and tired of him right after 1 year with all the dropped passes. But I do think it's working out well for Jim Harbaugh. He's playing chess. He's trying to get four quarterbacks stuck to top four. So you compare Marvin Harrison Jr. with Justin Herbert.
I wanted to get your thoughts on some of these picks. Drake May, and again, I know you've like updated your mock a few times, but is he still number two in your eyes? Is he the second pick in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, it's getting to the point where I think he could go toe-to-toe with Caleb in career. And I, you know, my admiration for Caleb. I know there's a lot that's going on Twitter and people are idiotically dissing him for no reason, nothing to do with football, just the way he looks, which is like really odd to me. Like the people still hate a guy because he's different. But regardless, I digress. Drake May is a superstar in the making. He really is. If you watch the tape, he had a like not a great year at North Carolina because he had zero NFL weapons. The year before, he had Josh Downs, who's now on the Indianapolis Colts, and you could see more of what he could do in the NFL. Prototypical build, 6'4", 230, runs very quick, actually. Plays a lot like Josh Allen. Has an arm similar to Justin Herbert. I mean, the tools are there. It might take a few years. I don't want him going to the Patriots. I'll be real with you, Arash. I want Jaden Daniels going to the Patriots. Because whoever goes to the Patriots, you're on a backtrack to your career. You're not going to be good right away. I mean, they have no weapons. It's just it's not a great position. Commanders actually have some weapons. So I really hope they go with Drake May, even though they're looks like they're leaning Jaden Daniels. But I think May's easily the second quarterback, and people saying Jaden Daniels just haven't like watched enough tape. Like Jaden Daniels is great. He also had two first round pick receivers he was thrown to the whole year, right? So it's easy to look good. And you remember his time at Arizona State. I mean, he was terrible one year at Arizona State. Now, of course, he improved and he won the Heisman, and that's a great accomplishment. But I would just be a little hesitant because of his weight too and who he was throwing to in college about selecting him over Drake May, which I think would be a huge error.
So a lot of questions about USC football after the season they had last year, and even more so with the fact that they're moving into the Big Ten. I am more excited than I thought I would be, mainly because of the defensive additions that they've made, not only in the coaching staff, obviously, but they now have five-star recruits that are flipping their picks, going from Georgia to USC. Listen, if you get talent that went to Georgia or committed to Georgia that are now coming to USC, and if you've got an improved defensive staff in terms of the defensive line coach that they got from the Los Angeles Rams, I think Karen Donald is not a part of the coaching staff, but he's been at a couple of practices. The big change, obviously, and this is a massive one, is they're going to the Big Ten. So, you know, I think I'd be a lot more like optimistic if this was if they were coming back to the Pac-12. But your thoughts on USC going into this season? Again, the way that they've sort of changed the way that they recruit and the defensive staff changes, I think could do wonders for this team.
Yeah, I think they're going to surprise a lot of people this next year. I do think they beat LSU in that first game, which will be an upset. LSU will be favored by a fair amount, probably seven points, something like that. I do think they win that game. I think Lincoln Riley's excellent at overperforming, but when there's high expectations, he underperforms. It's kind of what's happened in his coaching career. Like when he brought Jalen Hurts in, people were like, is Jalen Hurts even good anymore? And then they went to the college football playoff, right? Like, Caleb Williams' first year, USC was horrible the year before. They almost get to the college football playoff. And last year, when they're expected to go to the college football playoff, they're terrible, right? And part of that was the defensive scheme. It's obviously not on Lincoln Riley. Like, Alex Grinch was horrendous, an atrocious play caller defensively. And now they have guys that they're recruiting. I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. And Arash, I'm not as scared as the Big Ten as you are. I mean, the Big Ten has Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State are fraudulent. They can't score to save their life. I mean, defensively, they're great. And a lot of these teams are great defensively. But I trust Lincoln Riley to put up 30 points on Iowa even. And again, Iowa's a defensive team. Minnesota, like those teams would get bum-rushed by Oregon State. And like the Pac-12 was simply a really good conference that I think went to, you know, there's a ton of reasons why. Larry Scott primarily is the big reason why when he was commissioner, just his mismanaging of the conference. Go down as one of the most atrocious commissioners in the history of the sport. I hate to say it. I mean, maybe he's a nice guy, but just a complete mismanagement of everything there. I wouldn't be so scared. I mean, Michigan, look, but the problem is now you have Washington and Oregon there too. So you get the best of the best from the Pac-12 and the best of the best of the Big Ten. You basically have six or seven super teams in the Big Ten in Washington, Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and USC. UCLA, I'm not putting in there. I don't think they'll be any good. And then you the subconference is going to lose all their games, like Minnesota, Iowa, all these teams. They're going to lose a lot of games because – The Big Ten has 6-7 powerhouses now, Arash, and USC's one of them. Don't let people fool you. They have 9 wins coming their way at least in 2024.
Yeah, it's a. The more you're talking, the more that I think I focus so much when I think about the Big Ten on the top 2 or 3 teams. And yeah, like when you go to the bottom of that conference, it's not very good. And to your point, Brandon, when you talk about the mismanagement of the Pac-12, I mean, talk about a season in terms of, you know, they had 2 of the Heisman favorites. They had a team in the national championship game. You go to women's basketball. They have multiple teams in the Sweet 16, a team that could win the whole thing. The men's tournament, you know, having, you know, 4 teams there. I mean, this is a team. This is a conference. The Pac-12, even without USC and UCLA, should have been able to survive. They should have been able to add, you know, let's just say San Diego State and UNLV or something like that. And I say that because, you know, you want Southern California, you want Vegas. But when you look at some of the other power schools that they had, an absolutely mismanaged conference from the TV contract to the way they schedule games. To your point, it will go down as one of the most mismanaged sports properties in sports history.
Yeah, my thoughts on this, I grew up a Pac-12 fan, obviously. Yeah. My dad went to Stanford, grew up a Stanford fan, hated USC, and then went to USC. So obviously a USC fan. Look, Stanford used to be good at football. I think them getting bad at football played a part in teams leaving because they were a powerhouse, and you know, you would have had Oregon. If Stanford had stayed good, you would have had Stanford, Oregon, USC, Oregon State, Utah. Like there would have been enough, and Colorado's ascending, right? Like there would have been enough. TV deal was horrible. Big Ten just is king, makes so much money, especially with the Fox stuff and, you know, Big Noon Saturdays and whatever. Like the coverage is 10 times better for the Big Ten. The Pac-12 network was a joke, is a joke. It's still here for the next few weeks. It's still around, I guess. It's around, I guess it'll be showing baseball until May, yeah. And then it'll be done. But at the end of the day, Ross, it's a joke because Colorado is ascending. They have Deion Sanders. You know, they should have stayed in the Pac-12. There was so much rivalry, so much tradition. It's not like they weren't winning championships in the major sports. Like UCLA used to win championships in basketball. Arizona is a continuous contender in basketball. USC is back to national prominence in football. Oregon's a national contender every year. Same with Washington. My big thing was a lot of people misinterpreted the Pac-12 because they all beat each other because they were all very good for a long time in football. Like Oregon State would pull off an upset, or, you know, it was a tough conference. Whereas the SEC, and no one wants to talk about this, the SEC, like it is a top heavy conference, Georgia, Bama, you know, now Texas, Oklahoma, and they beat up on those bottom teams, beat up Mississippi this year. That is why they all go 11-1. They have 3 or 4 teams that go 11-1. Pac-12 was always super competitive, top to bottom, Arash. I think that was a big downside of the conference too, because its perception in national media, especially Southern media, where football is king, was distorted, was another thing, along with the Pac-12 contract.
And, you know, for years and years, there was like the West Coast bias or like East Coast bias. And the fact of the matter is some of the games were on late. When games were on the Pac-12 network, fans could not watch them. Even fans in Los Angeles and on the West Coast could not watch their teams on the Pac-12 network. So it was an absolute disaster from the get-go. It'll be a disaster till it closes up shop this summer. I mean, it was one of those things where it was a disaster when it started. And the fact of the matter is the only people to blame here, yes, the commissioner, but it's also the school presidents who gave that commissioner the power to have a TV deal like that, to have a network that no, like, you know, 10, 20 years ago, you know, if you could not get on DirecTV, the majority of sports fans had DirecTV. So it's sad. We move on. You know, USC and UCLA were the first to jump ship, but it is sad when you look back at, really, in their final days, how great this conference is and how USC and UCLA are playing for a women's national championship in basketball. So we'll talk about that when we, you know, during the week as USC heads to the Sweet 16 along with UCLA. That's all the time we have for That's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.